Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
This is Happiness Solved with America's happiness coach, Sandy Scarlatta.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's show. So here we are halfway through 2021, and it certainly hasn't been as bad for me as I thought it was going to be. So hopefully you've had the same experience, and it looks like, you know, things are getting back to normal. So that's really, really amazing. So today's guest is Missy Kreider. She is an Emmy-nominated SAG-AFTRA actress, singer, producer, author, coach, and child welfare advocate who has starred in over 60 American TV series, miniseries, and major motion pictures. We're going to be talking about her new novel called The Interims. So you'll hear all about that. She has also written some other novels, poems, children's stories, other literary works, and they can be found at KreiderLink.com. I hope you enjoy this interview. Hello, Missy. So great to see you.
Hi, Sandy. So good to be here.
I have been waiting for this interview when we sent it up a few months ago, or however long ago it was. And so I'm so glad it's finally here today.
Me too. I've been looking so forward to this, and all of your followers, it'll be gangs of fun.
Yeah. So you wrote this book, The Interims, and I just told you I've started reading it. I'm only on the first chapter. So talk a little bit about that, because I have a feeling that's going to direct the rest of our conversation.
Well, I've always written. Since I was a little girl, it was my first love was writing. I just love everything about learning and writing. And, you know, I've been an actress for many years, for a few decades. And I was very fortunate to work in wonderful films with just amazing people and TV shows and series. And I went to LA. I was back and forth because I owned a bed and breakfast that I ended up living in for 10 years. But anyway, I went back to live permanently in LA, and I fell into this kind of depression because it was just a different time. It was a different time period. All the agents I talked to, it was just a different time. Things were written differently. I couldn't make my living doing it anymore. And I was like, what am I going to do with my life? And there was this breakup I had. So somehow on New Year's Eve, 2013, I was in LA. And I rented a beautiful home in the Hollywood Hills with someone else. And this story came to me on New Year's Eve, sitting and looking over the beautiful valley in LA. And all I felt or heard, you know, I don't hear things, but, you know, all I felt was, Missy, write this down. And so I began writing this story, and I wrote it in a leather-bound journal. There was an intimacy my heart needed at the time. And, you know, I've written college essays and big tomes and, you know, many, many essays. I love the college essays I wrote. And I've written four novels. This is my fourth, yet to publish the rest. And children's stories. But this one came and it was like, Missy, write this down. And during that time, I was reading other books of a deeply spiritual nature and that were really helping my spirit to get through this kind of life path change. It was a depression at the time, but when I look back, I'm like, oh, I was just figuring out the next branch to go on. So that's how the book came about. It came about 8 years ago, and I wrote the original in a leather-bound journal that I still have, and it was such an intimate experience to write this book with my hand. I think a lot of teenagers these days don't get that experience because they're not even taught cursive in a lot of schools anymore, but I wrote it. It was an intimate, quiet time I had with myself. And this story just started coming out of God knows where. I really feel like the faucet for it. It's a very elevating story. So that's just how it that's how it came to me.
When I first started reading it, I was like shocked at how beautiful your writing is. I mean, I felt like it was a whole nother level, you know? I mean, it was just, I was like, oh my gosh, seriously.
Thank you. The words, that's really interesting you say that, only because I guess my college professors, whom I adore, they're like some of my heroes on this planet. But I remember one English professor I have who was just a kindred, and she said, Missy, your writing is kind of flowery. But this, the interims, I heard this voice from a, not here, you know what I mean by here is you sense. And I felt like, Missy, this is not supposed to be of a certain time. This is certainly not supposed to be of trend. This is about truth, and it has a timeless, spaceless sound. So don't use any trendy jargon words. Don't use any words that'll bring our minds to this time. We want to kind of dismantle trend and get into truth. And so I wrote, one of my friends said it sounded like 20s and 30s literature he had read, which is kind of close to my heart. I'm a 30s, 40s girl. That's just always been kind of part of my fabric of my makeup. I'm attracted to that time period, but it's a classic time. And so I just wanted to write with very classic vocabulary, as to not take us as so that this book could be read 100 years from now or 100 years ago, and you wouldn't really know what time it is. It's part of the plot point of the story.
So talk about that plot point of the story.
Okay. Well, I was depressed, and it's interesting. 8 years ago, suicide and our collective suicide situation that's happening with children and teens, especially early 20s, that's happening now. So lo and behold, I was writing something that's actually very trendy right now, ironically enough. But this is a book about the idea of, in Catholicism, you call it purgatory. In Buddhism, you call it bardo, in bardo. In other serious spiritual systems and philosophies, they call it Gehenna. It's the time, the idea of a timeless, placeless realm where spirits process before they journey on. And, you know, I really am a believer that our birth in this life is a continuation of who we are, and our death in this life is a continuation of who we are. And so this kind of invites us just to experience the interconnectivity of these spirits. Now, I have learned that we're all really one fabric, one soul. But spirits are the little flames that we take on in these bodies on this earth. And so the interims is about how the earthbound is interconnected to those spirits in other realms. And I borrowed from Dante's Inferno a little bit, if you ever read that in early college readings or late high school, about the levels of hell. So Dante's Inferno is all about these levels of hell. So here on earth, we always stratify everything. It's a land of separateness. You know, we stratify everything separate. So I kind of borrowed that. There are buildings in the interims, and they're where spirits process. So at the back of the book, I don't know if anybody else writes a book this way, Sandy, but I did it with all my years in Hollywood and New York and all my screenplays. I've been about stories my whole life. So all the screenplays I've ever read. So it's incredibly dialogue soaked. The book, it's written like a script. It's basically the pilot of what a lot of my friends and I are talking about making into a film. This book will be the pilot. So these are about the spirits that are processing through building four. The book is the pilot, if you will, a 2-hour pilot or something. So there are buildings in the interims, up to 9 buildings. And I made them so that like building four are the suicides, building three are the homicides, you know, and so forth. So that when you get to building 9, they're about people who, like veterans, people who've died of humanitarian causes. This would make a great series because of all the interconnectivity of who's being healed in the earthbound. We've got this crew of people, great cast, right, in New York, in a bustling borough of New York City, where the suicide rate is insane with children and teens, and it's just splintering the psyche of the bustling borough in New York. And so, but everyone, every spirit is interconnected to the spirits in the interims, and the Mirabelle is processing our lead character who brings us in. She's dead and she doesn't know it. And that's as much as I can say. I won't ruin the plot for you. There are a couple of twists in the plot, but you know she's dead at the beginning. She doesn't know where she is. I get that up pretty shortly. But there are lots of twists and turns that happen that are quite shocking. And it really follows Mirabelle and Jacob, her son, through these different realms and how the Earthbound is so interconnected. And it's very uplifting and hopefully will provide people hope for this idea that we cannot die, this idea that this is your suit of clothes. So why go getting rid of your suit of clothes? You've got a purpose. This is your assignment here. You know, some people are assigned to the heart. Some people are assigned to the lung. Some people are assigned to the toenail. And we've all got our assignment. So it really is about the sacredness of life itself.
Right. Wow. So what intrigued me about it is that you talk about the interims offers a comfort of those haunted by suicide or death of loved ones, exploring the quantum principle that physical death is an illusion. Can you talk about that?
Sure. I believe that, and certainly what's I was informed throughout writing this book, is that our bodies are really a suit of clothes. And the truth is so simple, the ego mind would mock it. But the truth is very strong. Its innocence is very strong. So the ego would mock that. And everything here seems to be 180 degrees upside down from the way things are. But our physical bodies, I believe, are the level of effect. So in a lot of spiritual systems, they'll say, you know, the word became flesh. So I believe the level of cause is thought, and that's why prayer, I believe, is so important, by the way. The level of cause is our thinking, and the level of effect is the physicality. Everything I look at around here, my bike, my plant, my candle, my soda cup, my everything, candles, they were all, somebody thought of them before they took form. So that's all I mean by that, is that the body is resultant, and in serious spiritual practices and religions all over the world, I mean, they say this in their own words. We don't want to cut. That's the only problem with words, right? Is sometimes they cut things off and make them smaller than they should be. Sometimes we box these ideas. The interims is by no means informed by any particular religion, or it's basically based on universal spiritual themes. But one of them is the idea of eternal life and the idea of the body is not your eternal home. All of us wonder, what am I doing here sometimes? You know, it's because this isn't your fundamental home. This is just a place we're visiting. So I hope that answers your question in so many words.
Yeah, exactly. No, I get that. So tell me about a point in your life, because you mentioned that you went through a depression. And being in Hollywood and New York and that whole life, how did you stay grounded? And did you have a point in your life where it was so low and you had to really, you know, try hard to get out of it? And how did you do that?
Oh, I love this question so much. You know why? Because we all go through our private, quote, hells, plural, right? Hells. And that's when I'm in a state of mind, when I look back, where I felt separate from you. And, well, first of all, just a little about LA and New York. I started working when I was a little girl, and I had wonderful times, and I met wonderful people. Sorry about my little fan going on here. In working. And I had a lot of joy in doing those stories, those films, those TV shows. I got to travel the world, meet wonderful people. It's all about people. It's all about our relationships to each other. But my depressions have been about like breakups, or someone passed away, or, you know, these things we go through. Someone got sick. You know, my mom had a stroke and I thought she was going to die, and I flew to her bedside the next morning. These things we go through in life, we all have our challenges. So I have learned from me how to stay grounded is my most recent deep lesson. And it's really through simplicity you know, when I was working as an actress and things were so busy, and part of that was fun and the rush and everything. But the other part was I never knew where my next paycheck was coming from. And I never knew the future at all. And it was very disconcerting. It kind of went against my grain, my personality, to be in a business where I just didn't know where my next rent check was coming from. So what I've learned to do, what keeps me grounded, and I was doing this when I wrote the interims, is spend 5 minutes every morning. You know, every serious spiritual practice always stresses the importance of the morning. You know, the morning is when our mind is most innocent and most fresh and most open to new impressions. So all I do is I keep it so simple. And in the morning, it's very important for me to, no matter what's going on in life, hopefully great things, and now I'm happier than I've ever been, but in the morning to go spend just five minutes with the whole mind, the Holy Spirit. I was raised Catholic. I do love Christ. I love lots of different spiritual figures, and I have friends certainly of all walks of life and of no religions, and it's all very beautiful. But I go and spend 5 minutes with what I believe my guides are, my God, and I just read spiritual material, and I light a little white candle. I love light. The light, I fill my mind with this golden light, and I just visualize that, and I visualize the light in my mind is connecting to yours, connecting to everyone at work. I kind of do this visualization. I guess they used to call it, what did they used to call that back in the 70s or 80s? Transcendental meditation. I guess I just kind of do that accidentally. But I visualize these beautiful things. I send love to my work. I send love to wherever I'm going ahead of time, because time really doesn't exist. That's what the interims is about. Now is all that's ever going on. And so, yeah, that's what keeps me grounded. And then, you know, I'm so lithe. I've got to eat protein and vegetables and really take care of my health, especially what we're all enduring with this pandemic. I go to Extra Link to take wonderful vitamins, strengthen my immune system, eat healthy protein and vegetables. And that's really it. I take a nice bike ride once in a while, but I try to leave my mind out of it. I try to, you know, that Buddhist principle, let's bring our empty rice bowl to God. Don't come to God full. Like when I used to be depressed and I was like, oh, Missy, you have to figure out everything that's going to happen. I wasn't happy. I wasn't happy. I wasn't dancing with God, if you will. I wasn't dancing with whatever your belief is. Whatever is the most sacred, tender thing for your heart, that's what you pray to, or that's what I find I pray to. And that gives me strength to where now I'm not depressed at all anymore, which is new for me. I went through depressions for a long time, like learning about, you know, one of my challenges about my own physiology, taking the right vitamins, getting, you know, but now since I do this just 5 minutes with the Holy Spirit, I call it the whole mind, if you will, not the ego mind, the little, you know, temptation, the horizontal, like I go deep, like into the vertical, into the now every morning for 5 minutes. And sometimes that ends up being 20, but I at least have a discipline to give myself 5 minutes to get my brain on the right train track. And then I'm reading this material that says, if you do that, you are guaranteed, like basically not to have a neurotic moment by noon. You know what I mean? Like basically at any point in the day, if stress is coming or we've all got lots going on, of course, I'm guaranteed to go, all right, wait, the morning, remember? Cha-ching, back on the train track. So that kind of helps me just to take no matter, and it's something you can do if you're a world traveler like I was, no matter where you are, you got your little candle, your cup of coffee, your little spiritual book, you can travel with it. So I'm kind of a practical spiritualist. That's what I do. I keep it really simple.
And I love that. And that's such great advice. And I love how you emphasized that it, no matter who you pray to, it's what makes sense for you. Like that's the important thing.
Yeah, because how could it reach your heart otherwise? Like whatever is your idea of that. Oh, and by the way, I heard a cool thing. However we were raised, you know, a lot of us go through rebellion with how we were raised with this idea of God, right? This idea of a creator. I read something just quick, simple, but it was so pretty. It said, however you were introduced in that innocence we all had to the idea of God, always bless that. Even if your life paths and your books you read, you know, have changed over the years and you feel differently informed now, it said it's important for us always to bless how we met the idea of God when in our innocence. Isn't that beautiful?
Yeah, I love it. That's really great. So I just want to spend a couple of minutes talking about when you were an actress, just because I'm not, never have been. And I saw you did a post. It was a picture of you and Matthew McConaughey.
Yes.
And he's one of my favorites because I was an extra in that film he did with Jodie Foster. What was it, Contact? Yeah.
I was on the set of Contact and got to meet Jodie. She's lovely. She's somebody I was starstruck to meet.
I rode the elevator down with her. And
ooh.
But it was this scene where they were at a cocktail party on the roof of this hotel in D.C. And I stood behind and was looking at Matthew McConaughey the whole time. And it was just like, God. So what was that like working with him?
Well, we both had that experience because I got to work with Matthew. And then later on Contact, I saw Jodie. We rode a golf cart together when she was in between scenes. I was there visiting a friend on set. Matthew is the coolest of cool. You know, I mean, who doesn't have a crush on Matthew? Let's just say that first of all. Right. And so, but Matthew is just so down to earth. You know, I'm very interested in him running for office. I think he would be quite a blessing. He's just represents, his thinking seems to represent so many people there in Texas and everywhere. And I just think he's the bee's knees. He and Bill Paxton were cool buddies. God rest Bill Paxton's soul and bless his new journey wherever he is. That with Frailty was Bill Paxton's directorial debut. So I was fortunate enough. There were only two female roles in Frailty. And I met Bill at a screening of a movie I did with Marielle Hemingway and Mike Binder called The Sex Monster, which was a silly, fun comedy. And a bunch of cool people were doing it at the time we did it. It was just gangs of fun. So lo and behold, I'm at the Sex Monster screening in LA. And Bill Paxton walks up to me after, because he was a friend of Mike Binder's, and said, Missy, I really dig you for this role I'm doing in this my directorial debut film called Frailty. Would you like to do it? And I said, absolutely, I'd love to do it. He said, the only other role is a girl who's strangled in the basement. And this role is a supporting role for sure, but you'd play Matthew McConaughey's wife. And I said, oh my God, Bill, that would be so much fun. So I didn't work for long on it, but I had such a great time with Matthew. And you know, Matthew makes the whole crew feel so at home. And I remember there were dogs on set and he was throwing a baseball to somebody and just makes everybody, all the extras feel extra welcome. And it's just real down to earth, but such a quintessential professional.
Now, is this before he got really famous?
I think it was kind of in the middle of when he was seriously on our radar. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, he was on everybody's radar and everybody was in love with him. And then, you know, I know people who have watched Frailty and it's like their favorite film. I work with a guy now. I work in a very stable industry right now, but I'm always open to doing films. But I don't have any interest in living in L.A. anymore. None.
Yeah.
I'm a country girl. I just need the country. It heals my heart. But, you know, there's Zoom and there are airplanes, so big deal. But yeah, he was pretty on the up when we did Frailty. And then I just remember it was just a really laid back set. Everybody felt welcome. It was just a blast. I actually got to work with Powers Booth on Frailty. And then I got to do my scenes with Matthew as well. So he was just such a professional, but totally cool and down to earth to everybody. I just adored him.
That's great. And his book is amazing. Green Lights?
I haven't read it yet. And I can't believe I'm admitting that in public, but I can't wait to read it. You know, I've just been so busy after my mom had a stroke and I moved twice. And my life's been, you know, I have barely had time to read any books. So
I just happened to get through it on a weekend girls trip in between the airports, and because normally it would be hard, but it's highly recommended. Yeah.
That's definitely batter up here in my bedside books.
So in addition to the interims, because you said this is possibly a pilot. So is there another one on the way?
Well, the book, I'm kind of old school and I love the truth. I just believe is so simple. So right now, some of my friends that have pretty huge names that I won't mention are reading the book right now. So that's where I am. But I'm also talking to some funders and investors, and they love the idea. It'd just be so fun because it's really an elevating story that brings a lot of hope. And, you know, I've never called in my favors in Hollywood, and now I have this book, some physical intellectual material to go, hey, guys, you want to do this? So I'm not worried about a Bible because I already have other ideas about where that would go. There's actually a building key at the end of the book. It shows you like buildings 1 through 9 and what, you know, the idea of what they are, but I'm open for that to change. So yeah, the book is what's on right now. And then we're also talking about if we shoot, maybe to do it in Texas somewhere, because I got a lot of folks in the heartland and central. A lot of this new energy is kind of blazing to make movies with purpose. And, you know, lots of conservative voices too, that are blazing just to make, hey, let's make films with purpose and that actually elevate and lift people's spirits here. So I've got a lot of that buzzing around me. And nice. It just seems like even the interview with you, Sandy, it's like things are just happening in my life in such a beautiful way since I got out of the way. I atoned. I got rid of my depression. Beautiful things are just happening. So that's kind of all in the works and kind of happening as I say this. But, you know, I've written a few other novels as well, and I'm not sure which one to do the final edit on yet. But I do want to tell you about those. But you wanted to talk about acting a little more. We can go talk about that a little more.
No, let's hear some more about your books.
Oh, okay.
Absolutely.
Well, I wrote these kind of like the interims. I don't know where these all came from. That's why I know they're good. Because they didn't come from me. Like I just feel like a scribe and I kind of write stuff down. You know, I just do. I bet other writers feel that way too. I don't really take credit for this story. I don't know where it came from. Great. I was blessed with a great imagination. That's what I'll take credit for that. So the other story I'm kind of excited about, it's the backdrop is the War of 1812, but it's called Samilla Swamp, and Samilla in Spanish means little seed. And Samilla Swamp was a very famous slave girl in that day. And I know right now in America, there's this whole racial, they think, divide, though I think a lot of Americans are a lot less racist than what we're being told we are. It's just the people I know. I know thousands of people. That's just my belief. I believe we all really love each other and love our country. And so anyway, this story, I wrote it years ago. I started it in college as a project. It's about 4 generations, but this very famous, brave African-American slave girl back in the South on a plantation who fell in love with her white master, but he was one of the good people that actually gave them good jobs and treated them well. And it's a different story, but it's all based, the backdrop is the War of 1812, which is my favorite war, because I think really America pulled together so much. That war just fascinates me. I know it's kind of an irony to say my favorite war, you know, a silly thing to say, but it is. So after I studied the War of 1812, which I believe is quite mystical in and of itself, it's a beautiful story about the generations and our genetics. You know, I find genetics far more interesting than the skin color conversation. Our genetics are so deeply fascinating, how we're coded and how we can do all these tests now and see how many hundreds of years ago our families go back. And so Samilla Swamp is this beautiful fabric of Americans and how we all came together. But it's through the life of a slave girl who falls in love with her white master and the families that come to be because of that. And so that's that. And then my other book is called Healing Marilyn. It's about a psychiatrist who's treating a six-year-old girl. And the six-year-old girl doesn't know what she's talking about, but the psychiatrist does because of his age. He becomes convinced that he is treating Marilyn Monroe reincarnated.
Oh, wow.
And so he writes a book called Healing Marilyn about this little girl, and she's an orphan in this life. So that's what that's about. And then my other book is called Little House War, and it's about a family kind of like Little House on the Prairie. Back in that day, in the late 1800s, early 1900s, about how these kind of, it's more sci-fi than even The Interims is, although The Interims is called sci-fi on Amazon and fantasy. But it's about how these alien life forms have come to harvest human hair and other things to take back to their regions or wherever they are in the 1800s. So it's kind of like an injection of alien life in the 1800s and what these people go through. Because the reason I did that is because they all had such, remember Little House on the Prairie, how they all had so much hair?
Mm-hmm.
It sounds weird, and it is weird. That also came to be as a college project I worked on. I loved my English professors. They're like heroes to me. Jennifer Ford and Gloria Garrison. I just loved Tim McGinn, my poet instructor. They turned me on to so much literature. And, you know, we all love a good story. I mean, that's in our genes. We're just used to sitting around a campfire instead of a television.
Exactly. Well, you have such an amazing imagination. That's really awesome. So where can people find your books?
Well, I've yet to publish. I really wanted to try out Balboa Press. They are a division of Hay House. Hay House is, you know, this kind of more spiritual genre. I had a fantastic experience with Balboa Press, and I hear a lot of people are self-publishing now to keep the rights. And so I think I might stay under the Hay House Balboa umbrella for now. So heads up there for my works, because I just think those people have been amazing to me. Just wonderful people, and I love the books that they produce. So,
yes, I agree. Is there anything else that you want to share with the audience?
Yes. Please keep reading books. Books are the backbone of I had a friend who said, "I don't read fiction much, Missy." And I said, "Well, you watch TV shows, don't you? That's fiction. That's fiction."
Good point.
So please keep reading books, and thank you for reading books. There is nothing more powerful than the written word, nothing. It will stand the test of time, and I do hope that The Interims is a comfort and a blessing to anybody who's experiencing grief or the grieving process or loss. And really, I believe there is no such thing as physical death. They're still buzzing on a different channel. They've just left the suit of clothes for a new journey.
So thank you so much for joining me today, everyone. I hope you enjoyed the interview with Missy. I know I certainly did. So to learn more about my book, Happiness Solved, Climbing 100 Steps, you can go to Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble. My website is sandyscarlotta.com. You can follow me on Instagram and Facebook at Coach Sandy Scarlotta. So once again, thank you. And I hope that you and your family stay healthy and safe, and that your life is filled with peace, joy, and happiness. Until next time.